It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
And joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, fellas.
Hello, hello. We thought we'd talk a little bit about Warner Brothers, your favourite brothers, the best brothers all around. How are we both doing on this lovely, lovely day?
Go on, Ewan. I haven't spoken to you in a studio formal format for a while.
Exactly. Yeah. And no other interaction actually counts. I'm doing okay.
You don't exist.
I'm existing in the ether and just, you know, Scott, I convinced Scott to watch Ambulance the other day and then...
One of the worst
things
I've ever done.
But we're talking about Warner Brothers right now and you already know who's his real brother. In Ambulance. He's like, he's my real brother.
Just have you seen Ambulance?
No, but I saw your Letterboxd review of it and it was the most... It was the friendliest murder I've ever witnessed.
Absolutely, it just killed me dead, man. I'm sorry.
My original review for that movie was just a big apology letter to you, and then I copied it out, and I was gonna send you it on WhatsApp, and I was like, no, I'm overthinking all of this. just review the movie.
You all need to watch Ambulance. I mean, does this stand you in good stead to actually check out Batman Beyond, or are my credentials ruined?
Batman Beyond, it doesn't have Michael Bay involved.
Okay.
My thing with Ambulance was like, I swore off Michael Bay after the third Transformers. I was just like, this is...
Just can't quit you.
No, it's like, I'm done with this guy. I'm just going to leave him alone. And then I gave Pain and Gain a shot because at the time, the general response was like, no, it's good, guys. He's better again. And I've got the fond memories of Bad Boys. Like, maybe he could be good again. And so, like, I went in, I watched Pain and Gain. It was terrible. I was like, no, I'm not watching Michael Bay ever again. And then when Ambulance came around, again, the murmurs, oh, it's really good. You should probably check it out. And then,
it is really good.
And then someone I loved said, I should probably watch it.
It's the best. It's technically the best movie that he's ever made. I don't mean that technically is technically correct. I mean, on a technical level, this is peak Bay.
Oh, those...
Josh, please watch it.
Oh, no.
The drones are amazing. This is the difference, right? Scott can sit here and go, oh, these stupid drones flying about what they're doing. Meanwhile, I see a fleet of drones and Michael Bay blowing up all of LA. And there's a big dog in the movie for some reason. I go, yes.
I wish it.
Yes.
If you combine the big dog with the drone.
Drone dog.
Yeah, drone dog. Or the drone follow the dog, do something like that. I remember when, and we'll get to some games at some point.
No, we won't.
I remember when me and you and Mr. Annie Murray went to go see that Plane movie.
Yeah.
And you and him absolutely loved it. And I thought...
The Plane is a 3-star, January dad movie. It's not like... whereas I think Ambulance is genuine cinema. genuinely.
There was a bit during Plane where I realized you two were way more into it than I was. And I was like, I'm just a lot.
Josh, there's a bit at the end of the movie Plane where Gerard Butler punches a guy in the face with the plane.
Oh, my word.
He's flying and it's like delivered like Rocky is landing the last punch on Ivan Drago and it is brilliant.
Please elaborate a little bit.
So they're taking off and there's the guys that have held them hostage and they're trying to escape. He's there on the end of the runway. He's getting ready to fire at the cockpit.
Right.
And Jerry Butts just has the landing gear down and just goes... Like that is the best thing ever.
Cut it into the wheel of the plane as it took off.
Like, yeah, Mortal Kombat. Yes, yeah. I'll overkill with the plane legs.
The plane. The plane is a main character in the movie Plane. Plane was breakout star of 2023.
I'm not gonna watch Plane, but I might watch Ambulance one day. I like Michael.
Please watch Ambulance because you'll love it, and then
I probably will.
But
yeah,
but the drone stuff is this paper amazing.
I'm so in a
second shot. It like goes over.
Oh, that's amazing. The bit where it flies at the building and then turns. Is he stretching the boundary? Of actions on the edges.
Boundaries. It's a hell of a time.
A normal podcast would have cut all of this, but now we're going to leave it all in because it deserves to be an Ambulance and Plane.
I
deserve
that. Everyone who's listening to this to go watch Ambulance and tell me hashtag Ewan's right.
Honestly, I hope we spark some sort of Ambulance discourse. There's not been an Amber discourse since, 2022 when it came out?
Well,
go on.
I only know Ambulance from a great Patrick Williams video essay.
Great video.
So that's 2 out of 3 people that I trust.
Did he like it?
Who've said it was really good. Yeah. He really liked it.
Stop watching his stuff.
You know what? If I like it, I would have stopped watching yours.
Stick to your guns. Boys, let's talk about Warner Brothers. There are a lot of things going on. Artist Enemy Number One is what I wrote them down as. Closing down studios, writing off various movies for tax reasons, increasingly butchering their video game output for increased monetization. And I wanted to shout out the fact that Mortal Kombat 1, we hardly knew ye. It got off the ground and now it's been lambasted for overcharging for skins and monetization. And now we have a new report over on Variety.com talking to various high-level Warner Brothers executives about WTF they're doing going forward. There's various talking points from this, notes thankfully written up by Mr. Josh Brown himself. And we'll dissect some stuff. So one thing here is the idea of them pinpointing their $1 billion gaming properties, to which they say that's DC, Game of Thrones, Mortal Kombat, and Harry Potter. There's a quote in here that kind of reiterates David Zaslav's general approach, Zaslav being Warner Brothers CEO. He said last year that they have this whole push into live services. Why can't everything be a live service? Why can't we monetize everything? And there's a follow-up quote in this report from CFO Gunnar Wiedefels. I did look up his name to pronounce it properly, and then I messed it up. But it's Gunnar Wiedefels saying in regards to profits in the gaming space, I've double and triple checked some of the metrics here because it's such a great investment opportunity. And he's stunned that we haven't been investing more into this opportunity. We're going to start tackling that. It's worth throwing in that Shadow of War died because of this general approach. And same with Mortal Kombat 11 getting paid fatalities and the state of Mortal Kombat.
What if we just did it again?
What if we just kept
doing it? The numbers on the sheet, Scott. The numbers on the sheet. They don't lie.
It spiked before it went down. If we can just spike it over and over again. But we'll keep going. There's obviously a lot more to this. But I guess general thoughts, Joshua.
I'm not a huge businessman, right? Surprise, perhaps, who knows? But sometimes you don't want to be seen by people who are higher than you. And if I was in any of the WB studios working on games right now and I saw that quote about an executive looking at the numbers and saying, we can't believe we haven't invested more in this, this is our next cash cow, I'd be thinking, oh no, they are going to start meddling in what we do. And by the sounds of it, that's absolutely going ahead. I mean, there's so much to pick apart from already what you've just said and the entire Variety report in general. It's definitely great. I would go recommend reading it. Mm-hmm. But straight away, when they're talking about those $4 billion IPs, I understand them all. But Game of Thrones was really surprising. I didn't even know they had a Game of Thrones game out, and they refer to a mobile title that apparently rakes in money. But I thought, really? Like, out of all of the IP that WB owns, Game of Thrones in the gaming sphere is already a billion-dollar entity, is it?
Well, I didn't know about Game of Thrones Conquest. Oh, I'll throw in, part of the Variety report itself says, with the focus shifting from console and PC-based games to 3 to 4 year release schedules, a good example of what to expect going forward is mobile games like Game of Thrones Conquest, which ticks the always-on box. And I can throw in as well, as an AEW fan over on the wrestling side, they have 2 mobile apps. They have the AEW Fight Forever game. It's horrific. But there are 2 mobile apps as well, so it feels like that idea of just get the casuals, get the mobile apps going, tick that stuff over. To talk about Thrones a little bit more, though, there was that Game of Thrones game from, 2010-ish?
The Telltale one, or something else?
There's a turn-based action one. I forget the name. Maybe it's just called Game of Thrones. Very much overlooked, but it had really good voice acting in it. I remember the presentation being really cool, but it didn't take off at all. And it wasn't canon. Like, it wouldn't have been 2010 either, because it predates Game of Thrones. But still, they've tried before, is my overall point. Yeah, you, what do you think of the approach here?
Yeah, I know. I'm also weirded out by the Game of Thrones thing, although it feels like maybe this is us being in our diehard nerd bubble, and Game of Thrones is just one of those things that it resonated with people en masse, and therefore it is a perennial IP that they can continue to exploit. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know what the ratings are of House of the Dragon, and obviously, you know, like, max numbers and stuff. So,
solid, yeah.
Yeah, no, this entire approach, it's not great. You know, you mentioned the Zaslav stuff from last year where he was like, I've just discovered this thing called live service, I think it's going to be pretty big for us. And it's just not going to pay off. There are so many different things in this Variety report that Josh is happily precision guided and plucked to mentally torture me.
He's pal welded it. He went in with the app. He's obstructed it. He's building quite a lot.
And the live service thing is the most frustrating. You know, we're seeing already games that have been sort of diluted from this edict, I want to call it. You know, Gotham Knights of the Year obviously was not a live service game, but there were the warts of those trends in that game in terms of its loot system. And then also, you know, with Suicide Squad right now, as much as it's not being referred to as a live service game by Rocksteady, but instead a dynamic multiplayer experience, whatever you want to call it, you know, the warts of that are there as well. So, yeah, no, I just find this all very frustrating because the conversations and the trajectories of the gaming industry have gone in the complete opposite direction. You know, you've gone on at length, Scott, about Jim Ryan's tenure, the head of PlayStation, you know, him stepping away, kind of axing a bunch of live service projects when, you know, when we had loads in The Last of Us live service game kind of canned as well. So it just feels like Warner Brothers, yet again, are doing that thing they do where they're about 5 years late to the party and are pressing aggressively ahead with stuff, ignoring all the warning signs. It comes to me that this sounds like people who do not understand games. And there's a quote about James Gunn later in this, which kind of really reinforces that to me.
No, I think that's a great point, man. Like, I think you're absolutely spot on. Like, every move they're making now stinks of executives who are just figuring out what games are. And they are, like you were saying, making the mistakes of, in my opinion, not just 5 years ago, but 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You look at them pinpointing, was it Game of Thrones Conquest, the mobile title that is apparently raking in money? And they're saying, why don't we get into mobile? Not realizing mobile was oversaturated 10 years ago, and it's quite difficult to break into that mold. And a bunch of the big publishers in the gaming space have tried, and some have succeeded, but it's not as easy as looking at the numbers on a graph and going, well, why don't we have 10 of them?
Yeah.
Same with live services. You know, yeah, live services can make billions of dollars. They can make, the ceiling for revenue is way higher than a box single player game. But how many of those die?
Yeah.
WB clearly doesn't have that experience right now to kind of understand that, I don't think. I'm not saying in the gaming division, I'm talking about from the higher up CEO, CFO positions who are overseeing movies, TV shows, as well as games. Like, I don't trust that they've seen the mistakes that have been made on the ground in the gaming industry over the past 10 years and will now be destined to just repeat them. And I imagine there are a bunch of veteran gaming executives within those divisions, within, you know, your NetherRealms and your Rocksteadies and whatnot, going, but this is demonstrably not the way to go. It's been proven over the past decade this is not the way to go.
Yeah, and like I said, right now, in terms of the way that Mortal Kombat 1 has fell off, like they overpriced for there was a Halloween fatality, a various holiday fatality pack that they did that felt overpriced at the time. There's a bit of a backlash to that. You know, they brought in paid fatalities in MK11. I think they were in MK10 as well, but MK11 got a lot more ire for it because it felt like the general approach to the way that game was structured was favoring the monetization side of it. But yeah, like you said, that disconnect between the top brass, just saying this is what we're going to be doing in the midst of, and even as we're recording this last night, it came out that a Deus Ex game had just been cancelled, yet another project from the Embracer deal that fell through, even though it was in development for 2 years. That whole idea of the top level decision making affecting thousands of people underneath feels like right now it's the norm. And it's like decisions like this are only going to lead to more of that. We're right on the cusp of Suicide Squad launching, and maybe that'll be brilliant. Maybe that'll actually be received, you know, with open arms by the wider majority. And I hope it does for the sake of Rocksteady, but I can't see it. And it has that like nakedly dishonest approach to the game design that I always feel comes from the top down. Like, how do we put in these bankable mechanics and 7 premium currencies and everything else? The problem that we've had for years and years, but it's just so obvious when you throw in the layoffs alongside it.
What frustrates me about the sort of creative decisions that are happening right now is it's not like Warner Brothers Games Division was previously any good anyway. They made good games, but the practices that are going to be implemented, like this push toward live services, that was already happening. Like, whether it was as overt as they wanted it to be or not, like you said, Ewan, you know, like the warts of that push towards engagement and retention over, you know, satisfying stories or, you know, high quality experiences, that was already happening. So it feels already like there's a kind of disconnect that they've made those mistakes and theoretically should be pivoting away from them. But now the higher-ups who haven't really been involved so far are coming down and saying, have you guys heard of live services?
This is all the war. It's the Discovery merger again. You've had this company come in and basically uproot the entire Warner Brothers leadership that was already dysfunctional for most of the early 2010s, you know, most famously with what DC was doing in terms of film and even beyond that with the way Warner Brothers Studios was working. So this definitely just feels like a case of like the new regime has come in, completely ignored everything that has happened previously, and just gone, we've got this exciting new fresh idea. It's going to be great. We're going to move into all these things. So for me, as someone who, you know, it's weird to say that like you're a fan of a studio or company, but as someone who has got a great connection with a lot of Warner Brothers stuff, it is genuinely really frustrating to see this studio, this company, in terms of both a film, comics, and gaming setup, continue to struggle and kind of just not really have a clear direction of where it's going or what it's meant to do. And like you said, you know, it's reflective in the design decisions that we've had recently. You know, the fact that a Damian Wayne Batman game, which is like the most Ewan Paterson branded idea of all time, gets canned in favor of something, you know, as much as I did like Gotham Knights, and I think that is more adventurous direction to go with that IP, but to go in favor with something like that, and then also Suicide Squad instead of whatever. You know, it is just frustrating. And again, like you mentioned, like the blatantly like trend chasey approach. I've gone at length before about how Suicide Squad does not feel like a game that was made with a Suicide Squad in mind from the ground up. It feels like Rocksteady were told we all wanted to make a third person shooter game, and then we're given the Suicide Squad IP and we can apply that to their thing, even though it doesn't necessarily make sense or is conducive to a good Suicide Squad game. Just everything about this at the minute is so dysfunctional and demoralizing. It's kind of upsetting to have this cloud of negativity just all around Warner Brothers for like years now. It just needs to change.
Yeah, man. I feel like the Suicide Squad game was made for a world where the Avengers was a success. Like, I feel like if you line it up, like, they must have been, look, the idea of the Avengers game was incredible on paper. Like, the whole coming together of Crystal Dynamics, Eidos, and Square Enix. And then that idea of, and all the cast for it, Nolan North and Troy Baker and Laura Bailey and everybody. And it's like, that just was so flat and it dives. And it's like, but the amount of time it took so long to get the Suicide Squad game over the finish line, but you can just see them doing those, you know, meetings and planning and going like, well, we're going to have something. What's our version of
it? It's like gone through three different iterations though, hasn't it? Yeah, Jeff Johns, who was previously the head honcho at DC, he was a writer beforehand. I think in 2010, he mentioned the existence of a Suicide Squad game. And then in 2013, we have Arkham Origins, which ends the teeth of the Suicide Squad, as does Arkham Origins Blackgate. We're told that Warner Brothers Montreal were working on the Suicide Squad game for a little bit. That didn't pan out. And then Rocksteady come in and take over the project in like 2016, 2017. So it's all just kind of like, this has been going on for a long, long time now. And there are some of the things that you could discuss here in terms of like the overall direction of DC and how those creative reshuffles that occurred in the early 2010s we're still in the fallout of those today. Like Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, a game where the guys who made Batman Arkham make a game where you play as a Suicide Squad and kill superheroes, and it's really dark and edgy. That feels to me like it's in the fallout of what we had with the New 52, what we had with Injustice, what we had with Zack Snyder. It feels like we're still paying for the decisions that were made like 10 years ago.
Do it, but like, yeah, they just fully commit to it. Like, you can't do, like, by the looks of it, obviously there's quite a lot of leaked cutscenes and everything for Suicide Squad. I've seen bits and pieces of it. Like you said, the tone in a lot of those scenes is very dark and macabre and whatever, but then you also have the hyper day glow weak spots on the bosses and everything's popping off and look at this loot and everything else. And it just doesn't feel like a cohesive product. It feels like a bunch of various what'll work with the kids approaches to things just mesh together and hope for the best.
It's impossible to separate the gaming side of this from the movie side of it, and that's by design, which we'll get to later on. Yeah. But you know, it's funny to see all of these really inconsistent and incoherent projects, you know, be released, because I keep going back to this idea that the previous regime had no idea what they're doing. But also the new regime has no idea what they're doing. You know, if you watched any of the DC movies from over the past year or so, like I saw The Flash in theaters and I had a decent enough time for the first half, right? But you can honestly pinpoint the moment that Warner Brothers has come in and started to reshoot things and started to change things around for kind of needless reasons. Like, who cares if Ben Affleck has more time in that movie? That universe is over anyway. Reducing his screen time to 5 minutes isn't going to do much. Like, cutting out certain cameos and replacing them with others, it's not going to make more sense because you're canning most of that stuff off anyway. Just that constant meddling. And if you look into similar reports to this Variety write-up, looking into like the production of those movies and how many times they were reshot, how many times they were tested to ultimately still get a crap product. It's kind of like, you know, back under the previous regime with Justice League, you know, they had a product and they brought in someone to save it and it was just as bad, if not worse, probably definitely worse, because you just felt like an incoherent thing that wasn't made for artistry, that had all of these warring voices inside it, and ultimately no one resonated with that, because why would you? It's just, you know, superheroes with a mishmash of palettes, and that's kind of bled into the gaming world, I think, and I hope it doesn't bleed in to it more.
Ironically, it is the PAL world approach. It's like the only thing that actually worked in that regard. Not that necessarily it should be a template for anything else. It is worth throwing in, though, like you said, that there are mentions in this report of that approach to creating various franchises or unifying franchises. Warner Brothers do say that the overall approach won't happen very soon, but they do want to implement games onto their streaming service Max as well and have a mix of TV, movies, and games all together. The idea of creating a synergy between something like James Gunn's ongoing DCU universe and the games. Let's talk about that stuff, like the idea of unifying everything. I don't like that stuff at all. It's so creatively limiting.
And again, not to interrupt, but you've mentioned before about this is the same, them pivoting heavily into streaming right now, I don't know if you'll agree with me, Josh, is the exact same backwards years late thinking as to the push for mobile and the push for live service, because over the past few years we've learned that streaming is very volatile. We know that the numbers are guarded for a reason. You know, for me, this is a case of just, we're gonna, like, the article at the start mentions David Zaslav navigating Warner Brothers through the streaming wars. I'm like, you've made the decision. You literally had 2 years ago when you were releasing all your movies day and date on HBO Max and taking a massive box office loss on it. Every single analytical report that's come out of the last years is that studios that pivoted heavily into streaming made a massive loss on their movies, because they would have made more from box office. You know, Pixar, when those movies were going to Disney Plus, more people were staying at home because, well, even when they were in cinemas, they knew that it was going to be coming on streaming immediately. So all you're doing by putting stuff on streaming is devaluing your own product. And this is something that should be nakedly apparent to them. And if you do that with games too, you're not making a more attractive product. You're making something that is less urgent, less required, less essential.
I think it's funny to see them talk about it, because I think any executive at the level that we're talking about now, I've slagged them off a lot this podcast so
far.
These
poor, hard done by executives.
Yeah, maybe I'll
cut up some slack. Just
Oh no, they've got the Animaniacs locked out of the tower, man.
But trying to get it. You see them. If this could be the best idea in the world, right? In theory, you know, merging all of these different aspects of the business together. But as soon as they open their mouths and start like talking about buzzwords and retention and churn rate and all of those, that corpus
content,
essentially content. Yeah, you just lose faith in it, or at least I do. You know, when they're talking about, you mentioned there, Ewan, like, it's not going to make for like a quality product. It's not going to make for something that's essential. I don't even think that's what they're after. Like, when you look at the quotes from these and analysts who are working with these big studios, it's not about making good stuff. It's not about quality. It's about retention. It's about engagement. As long as you're there on their streaming service and you're engaging with something for a long time, to them, that's a win. And it's hilarious that they've pinpointed games as a medium that's inherently longer in many ways than movies or TV shows that in their current form require more engagement and you returning to them over and over again. That's their solution. It's not to make higher quality things that people are happy to pay for and check out. It's how do we essentially turn this streaming service into a video game grind? How do we get people back and not canceling their subscriptions? Really, their answer is 100-hour games.
But also, like, from the ground up, the whole idea, I mean, the whole thing when this first came out, I think it was James Gunn that talked about it initially, the idea that going forward in the new shared universe, they would have characters that would go between TV, movies, and games. And they would try and share voice actors and things like that. And there was obviously a backlash to that, being like, there's no way that's going to work, like, in regards to the reality of putting those projects together. But like I said, that side of it is the thing that I'm, I guess, like, you know, as concerned about as anything else. The idea of trying to create something that the movie goes on the streaming service, the TV show's there. Oh, and then you can play the game and it's right alongside. You can see why a corporate mentality would say, well, that makes perfect sense. And we can monetize the game.
But James Gunn's a gamer, mate. It says so in the article.
There is a little quote. I want to throw in the thing of churn rates, because they talk about churn rates. Churn rates is just their term for the percentage, the likelihood of someone giving up on a given service. just referring to them in that way, though, of churning through your customer base. So we have a few things about churn rates. Analyst Kevin Westcott says, if you look at the companies that have large streaming platforms, they're dealing with 3%+ per month churn on their subscribers. Westcott also says live games, the ones that the gaming industry is now talking about, have a very, very small churn rate as compared to streaming. So you're seeing more and more of the streaming players saying, why don't we add games as part of my entertainment offering? No one's asking that. No one's ever said that. Can I just get a game on my net? No one wanted that. No one plays Netflix games. No, they don't do it. why don't they add games as part of my entertainment offering? Games have a lower churn rate. Music has a lower churn rate. And I've been recommending to our clients that they should think about offering a whole slew of other types of digital entertainment. And also, I guess it's in regards to the whole thing, you've got JB Perrette, who's the CEO of streaming and gaming, saying, frankly, there hasn't been as close a relationship between the studio and the games business as there should have been. And James Gunn is actually a gamer. So having someone who's passionate about it is super helpful. You know what would be better? If they were all gamers. What hell it was. Instead of just one guy. Adding that Warner Brothers Games, she says, that they're actively working with Gunn and Peter Safran on the core franchises within the DC universe.
I want to respond that.
As much as they want to do this unified front thing, they say that while they might be working on a Superman title right now, they're not necessarily going to launch a Superman game just because they feel obligated. To me, though, that's the mistake.
Yeah.
Because if you're gonna do the unified front thing, there's something to capitalize on in regards to the way that franchise games used to come out. Like, we grew up with them. A lot of them were bad, but some of them were great. Toy Story 2 effing rules. Toy Story 3 is pretty good too. There's a way to do that with a reduced budget and get those things out there. You're either going to commit to this unified thing and create stuff that works across multiple mediums, or you don't know what you're doing with this.
I was going to just quickly, there's a big chunky part of the write up this, but I joked to you guys yesterday when I first read it that, I'm not as smart as James Gunn. I don't have as good hair as James Gunn. I didn't write Scooby Doo. I certainly didn't write Dawn of the Dead. I wish I bloody didn't.
Lollipop Chainsaw either.
I didn't make Lollipop Chainsaw. But, when it comes to his position as overseeing everything DC related, not just movies, not just games, not just TV shows, but like this entire multimedia universe, I don't know how that's possible. I can't do more than one podcast in a day without forgetting where I am, If I was juggling all those properties, even if he's not hands-on with everything, even if he's not, obviously not directing everything, he's signing off on all that stuff, he's having the final say. I don't know why they're putting him in that position, because they're putting him in there to fail. You look at the MCU and what's happening with Kevin Feige right now, reportedly being stretched too thin across all of the content that they're pushing out. 4 movies a year.
Like butter over too much bread.
Butter over too much bread. And we've seen firsthand, even though they've still produced some good things, the quality kind of drop across board. Because one person or even two people, it can't be in charge of that much stuff. On a human level.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, no doubt it'll burn them out eventually. Yeah. It'll get sick and resentful of the entire thing. If I was doing that, I certainly would.
I think he would, because the amount of times he's like replying to people on Twitter with just random, just nonsense, like, James, just go make your movies. Like, you don't need to be replying to like DC fan 258 on Twitter being like, I'm actually the spot isn't going to be. Like, it's just, that level of granularity is bizarre to me. The thing that frustrates me the most about Gunn getting involved in the video game side of things is that that's so creatively obliterating. If you have to be beholden to his vision of DC, that to me just reinforces how no one has a clue why DC was special for so long. It's the myriad different interpretations that you have going on with those projects. If this edict was down when, say, like when Christopher Nolan was making the Batman movies, if this thing was the thing that Rocksteady had to be beholden to, we wouldn't have gotten the Arkham series. We wouldn't have had that creatively unique, you know, betas adjacent kind of video game series. It would have been, well, now you're going to have to just be beholden to the aesthetics of Nolan's world, which is so stifling. And I find it truly bizarre that they're doing this here. With the reason that it frustrates me is that I feel like they've looked across at Star Wars in particular, because not Marvel, because Marvel games have the foresight to not tether everything to the MCU. You can say Marvel's Avengers leaned into it slightly in terms of, we're going to lean into those comparisons. We'll use the lineup of the 2012 movie, we'll ape some aesthetics or whatever, but it was still its own thing. With Star Wars, the reason why it works, having everything in that shared interconnected canon, is because it is it has always been one man's vision.
Yeah.
It's always, as much as there have been different creatives involved, it all stems from George Lucas's mythos. There is a canon that contradicts itself or whatever, but if you want to live in Star Wars,
at least
you are living in Star Wars. With DC, you've had this thing that's been evolving for many, many years, and I think it's just, it depresses me that the best they can offer for this new era of DC games is, well, we're just going to make it like the movies because we need to, you know, we need to catch up with Marvel, we need to do this, and if we get this, we'll make it more. And I think it goes back to that point you were making about, they don't care about making a product, they care about having your eyeballs in it. If we can make the video games as essential to your understanding of the on-screen universe, then that means more eyeballs on it. And it's the same reason why people, and again, there have been good Star Wars books, but it's the same reason why canon Star Wars books sell. It's because, oh, we need to know more about this mythos that matters. I need to watch this TV show because I need to know what matters. I need to know what is impactful in this thing. Mm-hmm. And that is what is frustrating to me. I just see it so blazingly, like, cynical approach to do, to just, everyone's going to be so jazzed about James Gunn's new DC universe, so we're going to make the games part of it. It's going to be huge. Apart from it being practically impossible, on a just ethical and like creative level, it really, really upsets me.
I think there's a really telling line at the very start of this article where they're talking about Game of Thrones Conquest, and they describe it not only as a moneymaker, but and I think this is a direct quote, a way to remind people of the TV show. And I think that's exactly what they're trying to do, like, with these direct tie-ins. It's not just about the game. It's not about making anything good. It's not even necessarily about shifting copies. It's about keeping your brain thinking about these franchises, so you buy the game, you go to the movies, you buy the merch, you watch the TV show, you're in that world.
That's the monologue about retention.
That's the monologue from the opening of The Killer.
The thing is, like, I feel we're already in the middle of it, but the big paradigm shift at the minute is that switch between, or is that ability for various companies to bring in different mediums. Like, you did get the Mario movie, like getting a Zelda movie, you have PlayStation Studios or PlayStation Productions, whatever the hell the new studio is called, doing the Gran Turismo movie, the Uncharted movie, the God of War TV series, and the Horizon TV series. This is the new thing. I feel like, for the most part, like, obviously with Sony and Nintendo, they only remind you of the games because the games have the quality they came first. Like, in this regard, that whole plan is like trying to bake the quality in from the beginning and assuming you'll care to a certain level that you only get from leading with quality first. You can monetize quality. You can go down that whole route of franchising things if you get the right foot forward. Which obviously one of the biggest mistakes with the original DCEU was trying to reverse the Avengers, like leading with the idea that everyone already cares massively and then we can do these spin-off movies and everything, as opposed to building up over time. But yeah, I feel like the crux of the whole thing is that general lean into let's monetize the hell out of video game IP, which is a conversation that's happening in many different spheres as superhero movies start to die off. Like, what's the next medium we can get into and start adapting stuff, which is what you're seeing in the Sony stuff and Nintendo stuff. Xbox not got much to do. Halo, I guess, is another one.
Hey, if you'll permit me before we move on, yeah, just to go back to like the logistics of the production, I'm just thinking of like the worst case scenario, right? Because there is a world where Peter Safran and James Gunn's DCU gets off to a cracking start. They have the law down. Every production goes smoothly. There's no changes. There's no reshoots. But history indicates otherwise. I know it's been a tumultuous transitionary period for the entire company and their slate of movies, but think if you're a video game studio working on these canon games that are in some ways, if not directly tying into the movies, referring to them, working off their story beats. Say we don't get an ideal rollout for the movies and we are getting films that are reshooting and replacing characters right up to the wire, which, for as successful as they are, is the Marvel method, right? Like, how much did Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness change, for instance, when it swapped release schedule? Yeah, when it swapped directors, but even when it just swapped release dates with Spider-Man, because those movies were so intertwined. Like, imagine if they were making a Flash game previously, and again, I know this is worst case scenario, but then suddenly, are we including Michael Keaton? Are we including Ben Affleck? Are we including George Clooney? Like, yeah, what's going on? All those decisions in these big blockbuster universes go right down to the wire. Video game development is already hard. I couldn't imagine having to deal with a movie studio and keeping on top of that stuff and being as reactive as you need to be. Movies are just about getting away with it, and even then, they're not really. And games are even harder to do.
The only reason why it works for Star Wars is because if you look at Jedi Fallen Order, yeah, it's set in and around the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy, but you play a nobody.
Yeah.
You play no average person on the street knows who Cal Kestis is. Mm-hmm. That is the reason why Star Wars games can work, is because you can play a person in that canon and do your own thing. If you are going to take the same approach with DC, and like you say, they're completely tethered to the film, so you can't necessarily say, oh, I'm going to play as Green Lantern in this game because, like, oh, he's already in this TV show. Maybe you play as a different group. I don't know. It does not make sense to me.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are this far along in this train of thought to publicly announce it and actually maybe move forward with it, that is a huge alarm bell, because, again, it reiterates that they don't know what they're doing. And also, Warner Bros. Montreal have a DC game in development. They've had another DC game in development for the past 5 years now. What the hell happens to that if we're going with this new canon age? Like, well, that's
ridiculous.
That's something I haven't thought about. You know, I was just talking about, wow, I'm getting very angry. Very shouty on this podcast so far.
Didn't expect to be so incensed, but, you know, we were just talking there about, like, the movies and how they were kind of dumped out and kind of tried to be salvaged, but not really. Yeah, what does that even mean for a Suicide Squad? Say that game is great. How is that, like, an Elseworlds title going forward? Will they be able to keep that franchise alive, or would they put Rocksteady on something that is more directly related to James Gunn's canon? Like, how will that work? Are they even pushing this as something that is going to be long-term, or is it just similar to The Flash, get this out the door until we can start our own new thing?
Well, their message, that's the thing. That's what I'm the most concerned about, is ultimately what we get to interact with when it finally releases. Because, like, their messaging around, like, the end of the DCEU, and then now we're doing the DCU, or the Gunverse, or whatever the hell it is. And all that stuff with Aquaman 2 or whatever.
Lost Kingdom,
and the final scene of that just felt like they just gave up. They just did like a weird Iron Man reference and it just ends and everything else. Like, the messaging around that was so lackluster. There's a potential, like, you're trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, which, like I said, I think it's inhuman to give one person that much control. There's only so many emails you can respond to, so many set visits you can do, so many scripts you can write, so many things you can check over. It is impossible. There's no way that James Gunn can pull all this stuff together. Best case scenario is that somehow he has some sort of, they would call it a brand bible for each individual character, each individual franchise, and you lay all of that out. Everyone has a shared Google Doc, and they check in on it, and everything is right there, and you're going to do so many plot points because they're signed off, and you somehow unify the production schedules of movies and video games, at least in regards to the widest strokes of what those visions are going to be. And I imagine, again, that's a pretty corporate way of thinking about it, because they can say that in a boardroom meeting, and everyone goes, well, that makes total sense, that'll be completely fine. And then, like you said, the reality of video game development, if someone gets recast or for whatever reason or some part of the movie thing falls apart, it takes months to sort that stuff on the gaming side, if not years, depending on how integral they were to a certain scene or gameplay mechanic or whatever it is. And that's where the impossibility stuff comes in. Before you even get to the idea of how creatively stifling it is to not be able to do different games, because everything has to talk to everything else. Everything has to be consistent in regards to the characters and everything else. You need a unified front on the writing side, which no writer wants to, like, buddy up with someone that you're in a different country or a different state or whatever it is, and make sure you're writing towards the same goal. That's not why people get into
it. It's not going to be, you can't secure those actors down either, because if you're tethering it to the movie, it's going to aim for the same aesthetic, which I'm imagining is going to be like movie realistic. Mm. Mocap, you need actors in studios with balls on their face the entire time. They're not going to be down for that.
No.
And then they're not going to be able to like record stuff for ages either. So yeah, no, it's just, I can't believe that we're actually talking about this. Like, how is this not like just gone, ah, oh, it's a silly thought. Actually, let's just let them continue to do their own thing.
Well, it's because that, you know, like I said, I feel like it's been so brazenly, nakedly honest, these attempts at monetizing various fandoms and trying to do the top-down approach, the boardroom approach. And we've seen the bodies that come from it, the likes of the Shadow of War, the, you know, Mortal Kombat's reputation over time, and the amount of layoffs that happen when these deals don't pan out. I did want to throw in, obviously, part of the report is talking about that idea of mining video games overall as one part of this, as something to adapt and dive into the video game IP as the next medium to mine in general. And Variety's report says, WB's 2024 predictions, in the 2024 predictions report from our analyst company Deloitte?
Deloitte.
Drew a strong correlation between the success of films and TV shows and the offerings of video games based on the same IP, noting that that several of the top 50 grossing films for 2023 have corresponding hit games. The analysts estimate that the share of theatrical box office revenues from video game IP will double by 2025, and that most of the top streamers will be home to shows based on games at that point, following the massive success of HBO's The Last of Us. Which is the thing that I mentioned before. Like, I feel like your PlayStation are leading with that double-pronged approach at the moment.
So was that movies that have games are more successful, or was it games that have been movies were more successful?
Yeah. Their takeaway is like a lot of the movies that ended up in the box office for 2023 had corresponding hit games, but that's what I said.
Okay.
Quality coming first. Mm. Like, you can't lead with this whole thing with nothing to actually base it on.
I can at least see where they're coming from with this. I can imagine, again, you know, I still like superhero movies. I still like things that are popular right now, but I imagine suits in a boardroom looking at the decline of the box office revenue for not only their studio's biggest hitters, but, you know, their competitors as well. And they're looking at the likes of the Mario movie making $1 billion, the Sonic movies doing pretty good business, and then looking at TV like The Last of Us getting mad viewership and a bunch of Emmy Awards, you know, and pivoting to games as the next big source of revenue for adaptation. I can see why they would be going down that route, and I do think it makes sense. But is it for the right reasons? Like, what are they trying to get out of this? Is it just, again, a way to mine IP? And I think it's really fascinating, because when they referred to their $1 billion gaming IPs that they currently have, only one of those is actually an original from the gaming world, Mortal Kombat. Everything else originated from something else. It's already an adaptation. So if you're going all in on, adapting your biggest movie and TV franchises into games, how can you then look towards movies and say, oh, but the future of movies is to adapt the video games we own, because you are moving away from those things.
Like licensing deals to adapt to the video games, then keep that. I mean, the whole canon conversation is obviously way more of a DCEU Gunverse thing. But their overall business mandate seems to be unifying mediums under one creative vision or whatever it is. But it's just a part of this. Yeah, part of this report is that idea of what can we mine from the gaming space, which is a wider conversation, like I said before, on what do various Hollywood studios look to now that the comic book medium has been drained? Like, we need to rest that for a bit. We can start mining video games.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm still just baffling in this headspace of like, I'm just remembering that Warner Brothers have gone all in with James Gunn's DC mythos, right? It's pretty much every superhero movie the last 2 years has become like a partial box office disappointment.
The modern world, they're done.
Yeah. It's just, I find this all baffling. And Warner Brothers themselves, you know, they don't have any video game IP to adapt. It's like you're going to be licensing other stuff from other people, then feeding into... This is all just really stupid. Business is stupid, and I hate that we're at this point now where this is just... Oh man, no, it's just gutting. It's just really upsetting. Like, I feel like it's mad that we were in 2024 right now. We're talking about like something that had so much premise and potential, we're reducing it to just eyeball time, viewer attention time. That's not to say that business decisions were never an impact before, because they always have been. And stuff that is good can come from nakedly business-focused approaches. It's why Joel Silver, you know, all his movies kind of went so hard, like, even though they were nakedly about, we're going to appeal to demographics and, like, you know, whatever. Like, Jerry Bruckheimer as well. I'm here for a good Jerry Bruckheimer time. But all this, it's so algorithmically analytical and, like, obviously, the psychology's been behind it as well. It just feels like they're trying to get in my brain. They're trying to get in my brain and steer me into going five for Creature Commandos, please. Yes. I'll take the Creature Commandos spin-off game developed by Warner Bros. Montreal that used to be, I don't know, a Catwoman game. It's so bad.
All we want to do is get your skull, open it up, and turn down the lever on your churn rate percentage in that head of yours, and then stitch it back up and
just invent the box from Batman Forever.
That is the only alternative.
I want the box from Batman Forever now.
The box. Let's get Elon Musk's neural implants involved, and then he can get part of it as well. The final part of the report just mentions that their general approach going forward in regards to the studios that they're going to be using is in-house versus outsourcing, which Josh, you wrote down, is pretty much the opposite of Disney's approach so far.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. The idea of, you know, Warner Brothers own the various studios that would make these games and would produce the TV, the movies, versus Disney does licensing. They license their IP to the likes of Sony, Ubisoft, EA, etc. But that made me think, it's like, well, either you get this, from the Warner Brothers side, you get this idea of potential quality control because it's in-house, they can check all the boxes. James Gunn's right on the lot. He's going to check everything out. Don't worry about it. Or they can directly manipulate everything. And it's way easier to get all these various monetization practices or potentially whatever people don't want to see into the product until they're finally in front of people. And then things blow up where it's like, hey, by the way, this game has...
Just to reiterate the whiplash of all this as well. They were talking about selling Warner Brothers games last year.
Yeah, they were.
What is going on?
It's because that guy looked at the numbers and thought, I can't believe it. What an investment opportunity. Dude, to start meddling.
Guys... You want to take a look at this?
The general approach in that regard, I just, at some point for me, it's a question of trust. Like, do you trust to pull it off? It's a question of belief in regards to whether you think there's someone like James Gunn can pull it off. I don't think, like I said before, I don't think a single individual can do that much. I think they've seen the Kevin Feige thing and then they've corporatized it and they haven't acknowledged the reality of how Kevin Feige became Kevin Feige as we talk about him now. And then they've just given James Gunn the amount of responsibilities that Kevin Feige has now, which is the state of mind, the state of him that is burning him the hell out. And I don't think that's going to work. But I think it's a question of, do you trust Warner Brothers to do right by these properties and the fans? No, in my regard. And do you believe they can pull it off? No.
The other interesting thing here is that going into Suicide Squad right now, which again, we don't know how that game is going to be received. It could genuinely be like another hit for Rocksteady or whatever. I feel like one of the interesting things about this is that when they've done their calculations on their assets, on their, you know, video game assets, like the Rocksteady's and WB Games Montreal's and the Monolith Studios that they have in there, those studios have made great games. But one thing that I don't think the industry is reckoning with at the minute is especially in regards to all the layoffs that have been occurring recently, is how fluid the actual personnel of these studios are and studio identity.
Totally.
You wouldn't look at Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, and even though there are, you can say that, you know, Rocksteady's attention to detail is still there, that the presentation looks immaculate in terms of that, but you wouldn't look at it on the surface and go, that is a game made by Rocksteady, I don't think. And it's the same with, like, when they're talking about these assets and the fact that everything's kind of moving around, is the Rocksteady of today still going to be as valuable post-Suicide Squad? Is the Warner Bros. Games Montreal still going to be as valuable post-Gotham Knights? Or with a game that it might also get cancelled if you move in this whole canon thing down? Mm-hmm. Same with Monolith, who haven't had a game come out since Shadow of War.
The next is Wonder Woman anyway.
And it's all just interesting. They've got these, like, we've got these studios that have these resources behind them. But are they understanding of, like, the qualitative nature of that and how that affects their...
Just get it on the service.
Yeah.
Give the people something per month.
I think, you know, people in the movie fans, what a strange way to use that phrase. Movie fans, I think, I would argue, less discerning about where a movie or a franchise they like comes from. Like, I don't think anyone's going to a Warner Brothers movie because it's a Warner Brothers movie in the same way that people go to a Rocksteady game because it's a Rocksteady game. Those studios have way more respect and clout in the gaming world where you might buy a new IP from them because you trust the team or you trust the studio, you like the work they've done before. And I think we are getting into an era where these studios now are losing that identity that you mentioned and are becoming the franchise studio, whatever that is, the Wonder Woman studio, the DC studio, the Harry Potter studio, the whatever. And losing that kind of core identity, it always makes me ask the question of, is this the game you wanted to make? Obviously, you know, not every studio gets carte blanche creative freedom and says, I want to make this. But more often than not, I think the good publishers pinpoint what a studio wants to make and tries to, you know, funnel them down that route. I think just look at the difference between Marvel's Spider-Man and Marvel's The Avengers. To me, that's night and day between a studio that was passionate about a project and a studio that was handed a contract for a project. There's that story about Marvel going to Insomniac and literally saying, which superhero would you like? Would you like to do any of them? And they jumped at the chance to make Spider-Man. And then they got the team in that they needed to be creatively passionate about that character. And it comes through in both of the games, all three of the games actually, so far. Whereas the Avengers, you have this Square Enix product. And I'm not saying that everyone who worked on that game wasn't passionate about it. I'm sure there were, but it has the feel of, we've been handed this. It's not really a genre that studio is even known for. It's not a style of game necessarily. It's not, certainly they don't have superhero credentials as far as I'm aware. And you can kind of tell in the characterization, the presentation, there are high points of that story, especially with Miss Marvel, but a lot of it lacked the soul that you would want. And it just makes me question that. Are the people in charge wanting to even make these games, or are they just being put to work on franchises? I know you guys had a much better response to Indiana Jones than I did, but even that got me asking the question, like, did Machine Games want to make an Indiana Jones game? Or did Todd Howard want to make an Indiana Jones game and say, we've got a studio that can pull that off? I don't know.
They didn't make an effort with the title.
No.
That's the only thing I can say. The Great Circle is lame. Sorry. Whoever thought that the Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, Last Crusade, the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
The Great Circle is really silly.
Yeah, it's that's the kind of the thing that I meant about the you trust them to pull it off. I think that's the thing. It affects everybody at every level. And if you look at the layoff side of things, like when you know these bets don't pay off, it's only the people who have put 3, 4, 5, 8 years of their lives into the project that are the most directly affected by it. And in the likes of the Suicide Squad game, to bring it all full circle, we'll see how that pans out. Because like you said, chances are it's not even part of this wider vision anyway. And how solid is that vision anyway?
I love the stories when a team is working on a license and they have to almost fight for what they want, but they get it. You know, I remember when Respawn was first wanting to make a Star Wars game and they said, we want to make a Jedi game. And Lucasfilm was like, I'm not sure we want to let you do that. And then they pitched it, and then they loved it, and it worked. And you can sense the passion in that title. You know, spoilers for Spider-Man 2018 right now, but there was also a story about that, to keep it still vague, because you know, I don't want you to come after me. about them pitching the ending of that game, and especially what happens with Doc Ock and Aunt May. And, you know, initially Marvel was apparently like, no, you can't do that. And then they pitched it again. They completely won them over and they were allowed to change it. Those stories to me indicate a team that, you know, wants to kind of push boundaries, wants to take those creative decisions that I fear will be stifled when
you fundamentally couldn't do it.
Yeah,
you'd have
exactly.
The other mediums on board.
Exactly.
I feel like fundamentally, even without that input for the Rocksteady's DC stuff, post Paul Dini leaving with Arkham City and you get Arkham Knight, which I feel, as much as that game technically plays brilliantly, that beholds to every single Batman cliche in the book in terms of, you know, Bruce Wayne is the mask, Batman is who he is deep down. And with Suicide Squad, to me, it's just a diverging thing with DC where there is an identity of DC that has been built up over the last 10 years, which is fearful of taking creative risks like that. Mm. And you could say that killing the Justice League is a creative risk, but we've had evil Superman stories out the wazoo over the last 12 years. I look at Suicide Squad, I see, well, you tried to make Suicide Squad a thing since 2011, you know? Yeah. You know, and there clearly is a demand for Suicide Squad. Those movies made money. but for me, it's a case of you have made a game that is, I don't know, like, I don't want to be questioning motivations or whatever, and from every single interview and, like, post that I've seen from Rockstar developers, I've been like, this is the game that we wanted to make, which is fair enough. But it's, you know, was Suicide Squad the game that you wanted to make, or have you made the game you wanted to make within the Suicide Squad parameters? That's the question that I have to ask, because, again, I just feel like we've got such a boxed view of that mythos currently, and that is also holding things back. So when you add in James Gunn on top of that, he may have a better understanding of what DC is meant to be, potentially, but you're still going to be working within that tiny sandbox. It's very frustrating.
We'd love to see how all this stuff shakes out. But now, oh, go on.
I was going to say, hilariously, yeah. I am looking forward to Suicide Squad. Isn't that funny? I kind of want to, I keep mentioning this. I want to see the story.
I'm just going to watch it on YouTube, mate.
No!
I don't need it in my life. But yeah, this for now, but the words, What Culture Gaming Podcast. That's your passing.
My brain's on the box.
It's pretty much left of this room. That's also Josh Brown.
I'm going to watch Ambulance after this, I think.
Someone should. Catch you all very soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.